For April the 26th, 2014, we talk about Children of the Sun, Buckshot Roulette, Life Eater, and much more. Welcome to Level 497. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Everyone who's here was here last time, so there isn't anybody I can say, like, and welcome back or anything like that.
You can still welcome us back.
Yeah, well, us all equally.
Can I be welcome back after a week?
What's been going on during this
what
week?
We're really learning, no one is welcome to be here more than 1 week in a row.
Not the intentional message, but, you know, intent is only one part of the equation. Let's see. Moxie, what you been up to?
Man, not a whole heck of a lot. I kind of push back everything for this weekend. So this weekend, I'm going to a concert on Friday, and then our local theater is showing The Mummy, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Is this the 90s one or the 30s one?
Yes, yes.
Both?
The 90s.
Yeah. I like The Mummy. The Mummy's just fine.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah, they made what? They made like three of them, and two of them are some of the greatest movies ever made.
Wasn't that one of the first things that The Rock was in?
Yeah.
Didn't he play a
villain? No, not the one that was one of the greatest movies ever made.
Yeah.
I think he was like in the third one, maybe.
Very much was the third one.
Yeah. So he provided the body likeness, the 3D model basically for the Scorpion King in The Mummy 3, Rise of the Scorpion King or something or other. Then he starred in a spin-off movie that was about the character of the Scorpion King. Yeah. I don't know why or how I know that. I guess I was just alive at the time.
No, literally, what was going through my mind as I was talking about it is I think The Rock was in a movie, or was that a movie called The Scorpion King?
Yes.
So, you know, we're all right.
Yeah, here. Yeah.
We all have that trivia rumbling around in our brains somewhere.
I don't think The Mummy is an especially scary movie. I think it's more of like a real good action comedy, you know, kind of thing.
So that's the thing I was actually talking with my friends about, is it's funny. You know, there's the whole how do you chart, or how do you communicate how long ago something was?
Right.
Particularly in pop culture. So like, I remember when we were in middle school, they re-released the original Star Wars movies to theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember a family friend talking about when they were first released, she was too young to see them.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm going with that is, it's funny because I remember when The Mummy first came out, like being young enough that was a horror movie to me.
Yeah.
And
I was going to go on to say that it's not an especially scary movie, but those scarab beetles crawling mm-hmm. under people's skin and eating them from inside out, that is still one of the most fucked up things.
Yes.
That
yes,
really
it is.
Bothered me when I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That was definitely a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
But then, yeah. So, and then after that on Sunday, we have Goth Prom.
Goth prom.
So basically,
please tell me that's
once
exactly
a month
what it sounds
have like a goth night, you know, kind of DJ type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of the people in our group either due to being some form of queer or just not fitting in or something like that, didn't get a chance to go to their high school prom.
Mm-hmm.
And so this month, a person runs it decide that this is going to be a prom version.
Nice.
And so, yeah, that's excited. I got a pretty sweet dress, and I put together a bustle and some other stuff. So I'm going straight up like romantic goth style, kind of Victorian goth style. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. Right. Is there going to be a photo booth?
There is apparently going to be photos. Yes.
Mandatory. What are they doing to recreate
exactly? What are they doing to recreate the crushing awkwardness of prom?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how you have to think back. It is vitally important that you take these pictures like you have never had sex before.
That's one of the sweetest things about queer culture is just like taking those things and then setting up to redo them, but in a way that's cool, because yeah. Nobody was up to speed at the time, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's all this weekend, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So This is going to be a crazy weekend.
Nice. But... Well, hope you have fun. It sounds like it would be hard not to. Yeah. Ben, what's going on?
I got another two-parter. I think this is a good segue. On Friday at our local theater, they're showing Alien for the 45th anniversary. Mm. Mm. So we're going to go see that. And then
the what-ith anniversary? I'm sorry.
Alien?
But what anniversary? Like how many years?
Oh, 45th, which is...
Oh, okay. I thought you said 14th. I'm like, wait, is that really that recent? Okay.
Maybe it crumbled into dust.
And then the rest of the weekend, I have a friend who originally knew from Austin who's coming in town to visit with his wife. So pressure's on me to have a clean home to host them in. So that'll be fun.
You've stumbled upon the best way to make sure that your house is pretty much always clean, which is like host people regularly enough that like the cooldown on that never fully hits. Yeah.
And coerce them to gunpoint to clean. I assume that's what's happening.
Yes.
Yes.
It's funny how like when my partner comes over, like the cleanliness of my apartment has slowly gone down over the last 4 months. So it's like seeing what slides and what doesn't anymore. But yeah, if it's somebody from out of town, that still gets pretty sparkling clean though. So.
Nice. Yeah. So Alien, did you say that was Friday or Saturday?
I'm seeing it Friday, but they're showing it for like, I don't know, like maybe 5 days or a week or so.
Yeah. Well, they're doing it on, what is it? 427. What is it? That's the name. That's like the designation of the planet where they pick up the egg. Is 427 or something like that. So that's weird that that's also the anniversary. Like there's a day that's like Alien Day.
I am excited because my partner has not seen this movie before. But does not like horror movies. So we're going to see how that lands when the
never seen it before.
Moxie, that is fucking astonishing.
Well, it's funny because I'm a big fan of the wider
I know
cinematic universe. I know
you are. That's why it's astonishing.
Yeah.
What?
Yep.
Okay. Huh. Well, I mean, they're
look, missing prom, I can excuse. Yeah. Missing Alien. Here's the thing.
I know Moxie didn't miss prom. So, yeah. But yeah, it's man. Huh. Well. And so Alien's a weird horror movie, a weird first horror movie to see because it's definitely really tense, but there's also an awful lot of just like those people doing just, can we get like Harry, what is Harry Dean Stanton? God, I forget which one. I always get the two mixed up. But can we just get these folks just hanging out on a ship?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I do like how there's a tremendous amount of like build up before any of the horror happens. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know when the moment happens, but I think it's like a good 45 minutes into the movie, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it builds up, you know.
Yeah,
and you've got all that stuff with all the stuff with the android. Don't warn her about that. That's cool too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Also, point of order. 427, great day. To see Alien, 420, horrible day to see Alien. Can you imagine seeing that movie high?
I mean, I don't know. I've done and seen worse.
Yes, imagine.
You'd need to watch Alien 4, Hi. I think that makes the most sense.
Oh, gosh.
Is that the one with the queen?
That's it, yeah. Alien Resurrection. Yeah.
Yeah, and the basketball shooting scene.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nailed it in one.
Not far temporarily from Escape from LA, which also features a basketball scene like that.
Huh.
I'm obligated to say I still want to see them make a movie of Alien versus Terminator. Which actually was a comic that... Oh, no, I'm sorry. The comic was Alien versus Predator versus Terminator.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, there's no reason not to invite the Predator to the party. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Man, I feel like I need a twofer now.
I mean, not necessarily.
No, I'll figure something out. Not this weekend, but in the week following... I'm going to a concert, so that's going to be fun.
Who is it?
Going to see Death Cab for Cutie and the Postal Service.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
So the what's-his-face that's the same guy between the bands, mm-hmm. I guess, just rolled them all into one, and he's going to be playing up a storm.
Huh.
So what is the pitch for Death Cab for Cutie? Because, like, I've heard, like, I know a ton of people that like them, but I know nothing about them.
I think you'll find out at Goth Prom this weekend, actually.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Death Cab for Cutie is kind of on the more twee side of emo to a certain degree. Mm. Little bit shading into scene stuff in my experience.
Okay.
But yeah, softer emo.
Yeah. You know, like, if Heaven and Hell decide that they're both satisfied... and illuminate the no on their vacancy signs.
Good Lord.
if there's no one to guide you when your soul departs, I'll follow you into the dark.
Well, huh. It is appropriate that you are going to the concert.
Yeah, I suppose.
It is more Jen's thing than it is mine. I just know a lot of it by proxy. However, our running joke, she put it into our calendar as Death Can.
Okay.
And the Postal Service. And so it's been weeks. I had to focus to not call them Death Can on the show just now.
Oh, yeah.
That is the new canonical name for them in the Furia household.
I'd be down to go see Postal Service. I'm up for listening to sad Game Boy music.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I'm just, I am kind of resigned a little bit, like, yeah, no, just all these bands that I like, it's basically mostly just mid-2000s Canadian indie stuff, and that's got to be fine. Not always mm-hmm. Canadian, but a lot of the time. Yeah,
the theme is like, God, these mountains are depressing, and then you've got yourself an album.
Yeah, well, what'd you say, Moxie?
I was just gonna say, I mean, that sounds legit to me.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just, you know, it's hard to think of that as being 20 years ago, you know. But oh well. I had something cool this past week. My niece, she expressed an interest in getting a guitar.
Cool.
Yeah, she had texted me on Sunday, saying, hey, do you know anything about Fender guitars? And I was like, yeah, I've got a Stratocaster. And she had me check out a real cheap Stratocaster, like, on Facebook that she was looking at for $80 plus an amp. And I was like, well, I'll go with you to get this, because in the photo there was, in one of the photos that he sent, because I'd asked to see the neck, one of the photos there was a half full bottle of Jack Daniels on the floor, and on the side table there was just a big bottle of pills.
Oh boy!
So he's a real artist.
Yeah, we picked it up in a Taco Bell parking lot. Thankfully. And then we did it on Wednesday. And then over the next 3 days, I took that guitar and I just completely rehabbed it. I took everything apart. I cleaned it. I tried to buff out as many scratches as I could. I oiled the fretboard. I, like, filed down the frets so they wouldn't be, like, jagged on the side. And I, like, dressed and, you know, polished them on the side too. And went in and fixed a bunch of the electronics, because it was not stored correctly. So fixed some solder joints and fixed the output jack, put it all together, gave her a complete setup on it. And then because the amp, again, not stored properly, because the amp didn't work, you know, and I was like, well, it's going to suck. I don't want to let her down by giving her this electric guitar with an amp that, when it turns on, it catches radio signals. So I was like, I'll just order a new practice amp for you. And so I got her a new amp and I got to give it to her on Sunday. Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. That's she was, awesome. She was right. Fucking psyched about it. I was like, this is what you get for expressing a shared interest.
Then she started trying to play Stairway to Heaven. You knocked the guitar out of her hands.
No.
How do you play Smoke on the Water?
No, it's super easy. It's just like this. Yeah. No, I have no idea. I don't want to be like, I wanted like the next day to say, hey, how's it going? But I also don't want to pressure her to feel like she owes me anything because I did this. It was just like, okay, well, I don't know. I wish somebody would have done this for me. I wish that all of this was, you know, when I was learning, I wish I had a capo and a tuner and didn't have to like figure out how to get all that stuff. So just here's this for you. I've set you up for success. So that was really fun to do was to get out the tools and, you know, go about doing that for her.
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
So, this is a completely random question.
Okay.
But was actually wondering as I was watching the worship band in church on Sunday. For an electric guitar, is there any practical reason why it's like shaped like a traditional guitar? Like in terms of like, does the body shape actually affect the sound at all with no resonator?
People will tell you different things about this. Like you will see some guitars that are just like straight up a plank. It is, it's just, you know, a bridge to nut and then a pickup there. And then there are like big hollow body ones, like the first ones, like back in the 30s or whatever. My understanding is that the biggest effect that it has is on sustain more than anything.
Oh, okay.
But that has more to do with how the neck is joined to the body. I am not sure why like a semi-hollow body guitar sounds appreciably different, like what principle that is working on. I just have to assume that it is operating on the sustain in a different way.
Okay.
So you see a bunch of, that's why you see so much variation. It's also a comfort thing. Like they figured out with a guitar, like what was comfortable to strap to your body and sit with too.
Sure.
You know, so
that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. That was, that was exciting. It's also her graduation gift. So yeah.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So
cool. Is this high school, college?
High school.
Nice.
Yeah. High school, although yeah, that is also strange to think about. Well, we've done a lot of banter here. I think that we should talk about some games, and to do that we need to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Who has something new?
I do.
Ben, go.
I got two new things this week. First one I'm going to talk about is a simple game whose title conveys everything that it needs to, and that's Buckshot Roulette.
That tells you nothing.
Have you guys heard of this game?
I have heard of it. I have no idea what it is. And I, every time I see it, I'm like, what the hell is a Buckshot Roulette?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I considered streaming it last weekend, but I did something different that I will talk about.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slept?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry?
I said slept.
Slept?
I
decided to sleep instead of play games.
Oh, no. I just... I streamed something else instead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Back to the Buckshot, guys.
Okay.
So the premise of this game is you are in a room with somebody who kind of looks like Jigsaw with a lot of jagged teeth, And there's a 12-gauge shotgun there, and a certain number of bullets and blanks get loaded into the shotgun, and you take turns either firing it at yourself or at them, or use items, and you each have a hit point, so it's like a pretty simplified sort of dual system. Not to say that I had this idea for a game, but in college, I did a lot of math problems, like looking at like duels, if like there were like multiple people, and if you had like maybe like some sort of six shooter, that sort of thing, where the same sort of thing where it's like some were filled, some were empty. It is very interesting just from like a math point of view at like what the optimal strategies are. They do a good job of like breaking it up into rounds and of like increasing complexity or like interesting settings, despite this like limited number of space. So for example, a very simple case is there's one bullet, there's one blank. You get the shotgun first. You can, if you choose to shoot it at yourself, which, by the way, content warning, I guess, for this entire thing.
Also, yeah. I do have to say, do not shoot yourself with a blank. A blank will definitely kill you.
Yeah. That wadding will go right out the back of your head. Yeah.
So I'm just going to ignore the seriousness of the context of this and just keep pretending that this is in video game land and there's not any consequences for this. But in the game, at least, if you shoot yourself with a blank, you get to continue going. It doesn't pass, like, turn to the other person. And if it's a actual shot, you would probably want to shoot the other person, but then they'll get priority, and then it's their turn. Kind of what you...
If you shoot the other person, like, aren't they dead so you win?
Well, it's like you have a hit point system, so it's like each person...
Okay.
Yeah. So each person might have it varies round to round. So you might have 2 hit points, you might have 5 hit points. It depends on what round you're in. And so there's different setups for that. Then kind of where the complexity comes in beyond that setup is you're given a random assortment of items at the start of every round. And that kind of changes the dynamics of the game. So for example, handcuffs, you can handcuff the opponent and it's basically your turn 2 turns in a row. the items are weird too.
I'm just loving that this works according to like Calvin Ball rules.
Wait, what's Calvin Ball?
From Calvin Hobbes, just that the rules or whatever you can get away with.
Some of the other ones make less sense as you go on. Like, for example, there's a beer where if you drink it, you discharge a shot of the shotgun.
That comports with my experience. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There's a pack of cigarettes where if you smoke, you regain health.
Okay. I mean, we're talking in the short term here is the thing.
Yeah. So anyway, you're giving it like a certain amount of these sorts of items that kind of change the dynamics of the game. And so you're trying to puzzle out how to win that round. The AI is typically pretty good. Sometimes it's kind of spotty where it's like, very much in their favor to shoot at you and they don't or something like that. But they avoid doing like outright dumb things for the most part. It's just sometimes they make what seems like non-optimal moves.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I realize... Ben, you at least will appreciate this. So this is like a dynamic programming problem, right?
What do you mean by that?
Like you explore the... solution space and then use dynamic programming to determine the optimum algorithm for like... how to not get shot?
I don't know if I can speak to that or not, but it is interesting thinking about what the optimal solution is in these situations. One time I was extremely upset because I lost a run because I smoked when I hadn't lost any hit points, and apparently you can't go over your starting value for hit points. Rookie mistake. But kind of like the fun of this game is like getting into situations where either you are guaranteed a win or feeling the terror of of like shooting, having a blank go off, and then passing priority to the opponent, who now gets like two or three shots at you, and like without any like comeback. So there's like a fun ebb or flow there. Oh yeah, one weapon in particular is there's like a blade to saw off the end of the shotgun, so then it counts as like two damage instead of one if it fires. So like a cool like heightening of the stakes. And the format of the game is you have to try and win three rounds in a row. And if you don't, you just restart the run, essentially. And then even after you do that, they kind of add to the meta of the game where, so hopefully this isn't a huge spoiler, since you can beat the game pretty quickly, quote unquote, the first run through. After you beat the game, like the first run through, you start off in a bathroom before you walk into this like Russian roulette area. There will then be Quaaludes there in the bathroom that you can opt to take, which I guess like disadvantage you. And then you have to try and do like a double or nothing run against the opponent.
What was that word?
Quaaludes?
Quaaludes or double or nothing?
It's a 70s pill popping. It was like, you know, for
methaqualone.
For swingers and you know, minor league baseball players who had like five different families across the country.
I've never heard of that before.
Watch Wolf of Wall Street or the meme that I will post in the backstage to have a much better understanding. I really like this just because of like the mathiness of it, and I don't know. And it's like a well-presented game too. Like it's well put together and a well execution of the game. A lot of the items and the functionality of the game is like diegetic or all like, for example, if you see like your health meter is, like this 80s screen that's on the table, and it'll like pan over to the in-game object to show like what's going on, as opposed to it being very like UIE and like having a lot of like meters and stuff like that around.
Yeah.
So like kudos, because it's a single dev, I think, who made this and put it out, and it's only $3 too. So I think that's part of why people appreciate it.
This is made This is made by Mike Klubnica, actually I really enjoyed what they put out before this. If you go, I have talked about and I streamed, it's like a little collection of games they did called Unsorted Horror, like Unsorted, like Unsorted List. Played a while back, and there's a bunch of really cool stuff in there. So like the aesthetic of this makes sense as like a haunted PS1 kind of thing, because they're working in that kind of space. Yeah,
that's kind of where they cut their teeth.
Kind of reminds me of Inscription some.
Yeah,
a bit. Yeah. And exactly. Instead of playing Magic with them, though, you're playing Russian roulette. So
yeah, I would be shocked if Inscription wasn't something that that the developer cited,
inspired. Yeah.
Also, I could not remember the name of Inscription, so I just googled weird card game video game, and it was the first result.
Yeah,
fair,
excellent,
thanks. Yeah, this game looks like it's really good. This feels a little bit like an expansion of there was a piece of Resident Evil 7 DLC where the shitty son of the Baker family, Lucas, got somebody into like a game of poker. But you're strapped in, and it's a robot playing against you, and there's a big buzzsaw. Or no, it's like a blackjack variant that it's doing, and as you like win or lose, it is buzzsaw moves back and forth between you and somebody else. It feels kind of a piece with that as well.
Yeah. I think the only improvement would be like if you could do multiplayer with this. I think that would be a lot of fun as well.
I feel like I would love to see a game that did this actually in a first person shooter context, so where like you had to actually hit the other people, but you get like one shot and then they get the gun.
I don't think I have too much more to say about it. I don't know how long the legs are for this game. I haven't beat the Double or Nothing variant yet, because of the aforementioned mistake of smoking. Smoking does, in fact, kill, as it turns out, in video games as well as real life. So
the Steam page says that there is multiplayer coming soon.
Oh, nice. Sick.
Yeah. Ah. And also it's sold 1 million copies, which, like, hell yeah. I mean, and that came out. That hasn't even been out a month. It came out on April the 4th. Sorry, I'm just reading a bunch of data. I'm just reading a bunch of shit off this store entry. But, like, yeah, good for them.
The music is good in the game as well, but it goes away. Like, the main menu music's really good, and you walk through a club to get to the roulette place, and the music there is really good. So there's potential for... Anyway, whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. No more questions about that. I'm going to move on to the next game. Mm-hmm. Other game I've been playing this week is a game called As Dusk Falls, which is...
Oh, that sounds familiar.
It's a game put out through Xbox Studios, I think. I don't know who the sub-company is, but it's like a choose-your-own-adventure type game, but it has like relatively high production value to it. It came out, I think, 2 years ago, so it's been out for a little while. But
Does that have Mark Hamill?
I don't believe so.
Because that is a elder beard-having Mark Hamill-looking motherfucker.
If it's the main character, it's somebody different. I don't believe Mark Hamill's in this. I have gone through the IMDb page, and there are some like more famous, like younger actors in it. But this is basically, think like maybe like Quantic Dream type game, except it's a little bit more limited in scope, and there's not any like gameplay in between as far as like walking around or like interacting with environments. It's just purely the kind of like narrative part of that sort of game.
It's literally the studio who does it. It's called Interior Night. Mm-hmm. It is literally a sub studio of Quantic Dream.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
then perfect. Yeah, it's like that's probably the half that does that.
Hopefully David Cage has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. I think the differentiating factor between this and like a Quantic Dream game is that the animation is like somewhat stylized, where what it looks like how they made the game is that they actually like film scenes with actors. And then they went back over kind of and like rotoscoped it almost. Mm-hmm. And except instead of you seeing like a video, they're basically showing the key frames of the actor's performance.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, it's almost like how people will present like comic books in like video games where,
right.
Yeah. Where it's like, you just see like the stylistic poses of people as they're like talking to one another. It takes a little bit to kind of get in the flow of that. It might be like has a little bit of friction at first, maybe. But otherwise, it's serviceable. And if it's like, if this is a type of game that you want to play where it's like you're making different choices or, you know, trying to do different things, basically the main action in the game outside of like choosing dialogue options is there are like quick time events. But it's done insofar as tapping a left mouse or swiping a left mouse in a certain direction.
Are they timed, or is this just like you do the motion that's kind of like the thing, so you did the thing?
They are timed, but it is a very like lenient amount of time. Okay. Like, I haven't run into any situations. I think there's the only situation I ran into where I felt ill prepared was it was like a new prompt that I hadn't seen before. I think that was the only time that I like failed a prompt in the game so far. Otherwise, it's pretty friendly. I haven't checked the accessibility options, so I'm not sure how they handle that if you're not into QuickTime events. But they are pretty upfront too with like being able to explore the story. After you finish a chapter, they'll show you the graph of like all the choices you could have made and where that leads you. Mm-hmm. So I do like that aspect of it. And the story itself is like somewhat interesting, varying degrees of like campiness to it. Yeah, so far I'm liking it. I got it mostly because it was on sale and it was on my wish list, I think. Or at least I had seen the game before and had like somewhat of an interest in it. So since it was super cheap, I figured I'd pick it up. So I'm only like 2 chapters into it out of 6 chapters. So I don't really have too much to say about the game overall, other than I've enjoyed it so far and I'll probably keep playing it. So
what's like the story set up? I mean, obviously, you know, it's narrative, so no, don't spoil, but like,
exactly. Basically the premise is there's a family driving across the country, to take a new job. It's a husband, a wife, an older person of relation to them and their child. And you kind of find out more about like the family dynamics as it goes on. But the inciting incident is that they get into a car wreck in Arizona. And the car that they run into, they later interact with those people in a different context, I guess. But they run into like locals that are in the town. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a crimey theme to the game. Mm-hmm. But there's also kind of playing around with time too, because it's set in the past, but your narrator's in the future. So it's not really revealed how that all ties together at the outset. So anyway, so far so good. I don't know mm-hmm. if it'll, you know, be explosive or not, you know, like with the rest of it, but I do want to go back and try a few things, because they do, one thing that I do appreciate about it is there are kind of like, outcomes that are very desirable that you might be able to get to if you replay and kind of have perfect play to it. Mm-hmm. So I do like the fact that they do that.
No.
I think the one time I tried something like very different or something that would seem like it would have a huge effect in a direction, kind of nothing happened of it. And so it kind of felt the corridor in that situation. But it does appear that there's a few ways to kind of branch out of, in significant ways. So I do want to go back and try that. So anyway,
cool.
As dusk falls.
Yeah.
As dusk is wont to do.
Well, I was thinking like the kind of motion comic, production on that does make it easier for them on a limited budget to have those branches be a little bit more meaningful, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Probably more so than like, you know, if it was just like, oh, we need assets if you're going to go to this place. So hire this studio to make all of them. And then we have to mocap it if it can just be. Yeah.
Yeah. Like an example of that is like one character got shot in my story playthrough. And like in the, like a non-fatal wound or something. But it shows like when they arrive to the scene, it shows them like kind of like hobbling or holding, you know, the part where they got shot. And it's like, yeah, the fact that that's only a single picture and not like, you know, an entire thing is like, yeah, that makes it much more reasonable to have branches. So,
yeah. Nice.
And the art style in general, it is like very pretty, like the way that they have like the Southwest and stuff. Yeah. So
kind of a mixed media kind of look to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So Buckshot Roulette and As Dusk Falls.
Yep.
I've got a new one and I just have one. But I'll do it here, since we already talked about something kind of horror-y. This past weekend, I streamed a game called Life Eater. This is a game that is made by, it's at least published by the same people who did a vampire shooter game El Paso Elsewhere that came out kind of recently.
That's such a great name.
It's a great name. Let me see here. I need to actually pull up who this is. It's Strange Scaffold, who have actually done they've developed more than I thought. Is the thing.
Oh, you know what? I wouldn't have made the connection, but there actually is somewhat of a similar graphical or, you know, visual aesthetic to them.
Yeah, so, I mean, especially in the cutscenes on this one, just in terms of being motion comic, with kind of those painterly slide kind of things. This is a relatively simple, I would say, to its detriment, puzzle game that has a very neat idea at the core of it. So in this game, you are playing somebody named Ralph. Although whenever the name is shown or spoken, it's all garbled, but you can tell it's Ralph. He's a guy who lives in suburbia, and he has a god who speaks to him that says it will end the world if Ralph does not bring a sacrifice every year. The god lays out what, you know, the criteria for who this should be. And then Ralph sets about stalking and kidnapping them, is the idea here. And you play as Ralph, and you are doing, like, the surveillance work. Not quite literally, but almost in a board game-style way, where what you are, you know, basically the entire interface for this is a video editing timeline with a bunch of blocks. You know, so like it's a day calendar, but, you know, organized horizontally with blocks for what the, you know, for what they're doing, like for a block of activity, right?
It looks like iMovie or, you know, GarageBand for anyone who's messed with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have like a visibility meter for like how suspicious people are of you. And that raises when you click on a time block and then do different activities that have like different possibilities of success, but also have varied visibility costs and also take up a certain amount of time. You have a limited number of hours that you can spend trying to uncover what their schedule is. Either to pinpoint like the exact right time for when you want to move, or to actually identify who out of this group of related people are the ones that you want to kidnap, to match the demands of your god. All of this takes place in this interface. You have cooldown things that you can do that take time, but restore your visibility meter that reduce that, and also will give you special like tokens you can use when you are performing an activity to negate the visibility cost of that. So that's like mechanically like the push and pull of what's going on here.
What's the penalty if somebody like suspects you too much that you're watching?
Yeah. So, there's like a three strike system. So when you enter like above like 80%, there's a chance that the next thing that you do will cause them to notice, and then you get a strike, and then it's three strikes, you're out.
Okay.
It's not especially hard to manage that meter because you can always see, you know, how close you are before you need to do like a cool off activity. Mm-hmm. The times when I got a strike, it's because I wasn't paying attention because I was focused on the timeline. The neat thing about this is when it causes you to think a little bit like a detective when you are trying to, you know, figure out which of these people is the right one to take. Right. So the prompt that you will get will be something like, I'm just trying to think of an example. I'll take an early one. The example will be, I want you to bring me a monster. You know, bring me somebody who deserves it, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at, and it's a group of housemates, then you're poking around and you might notice like, okay, so here's broadly what their work schedule is. So is there anything there? No. Okay. What would somebody do? Okay. If they're being shady, they might do something at night. Well, the nights don't really reveal anything except, oh, all four of these people have this one time block that lines up. Well, that's a party. Well, maybe I need to focus around there, because even though they're all at this kind of shared thing, you know, that's too much of a coincidence. Maybe I need to focus on that. Mm-hmm. And so you end up like kind of doing like a little bit of deduction in ways that are pretty satisfying across like the 9 or 8 of these that are an actual like challenge, you know, made like that, mm-hmm. Made to be, specifically they're designed puzzles. And you just go in and figure out, and once you have enough information, you make your choice of who you kidnap, and then there's like a little quiz while you're doing the ritual of like what body parts to remove for the sacrifice, depending on criteria. It's basically presented like an operation board, but it's like, if they live alone, do this. If they don't live alone, do this. So it's kind of like, were you paying attention? That's a little bit undercut by the fact that it's the same questions every time. So, you know, to check, basically, you know what to check. You know to count like how many hours of sleep they get. Right.
So the other funny thing in this, and I guess this is minor spoiler. There is none of the people, for example, ever get less than the recommended number of hours. Like a whole bunch of the prompts, there's never it. They are never right.
I don't know how much that is. I have no idea how much that is randomized. So there's the story mode in this, which tells the story of Ralph as he goes and does these things. But somebody identifies him, says his name at a grocery store, and he thinks that he's been caught.
At Ralph's?
Weirdly, yeah. but he kidnaps this guy, this young man, and keeps him in a cage in the basement for 10 years. And the story is about like this evolving relationship between the two of these guys, which is interesting and engaging enough. And there's, you know, fun things to be done in the later cases regarding choices to be made. But
so how much can we talk about this story?
I don't want to because it's like this is a somebody might be curious because it's a novel enough setup, right? And also it is pretty new still. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like take away any of the mystery around
That's reasonable.
Yeah. Moxie was watching the stream for a good deal of it anyway.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What happens if you fail to kill someone?
So if you pick the wrong person or if you botch the ritual by taking out the wrong parts, it's a little bit underwhelming.
So you're gonna kill someone.
Yes.
You can never not kill someone.
You can run out of time, and then it's just a game over.
Okay.
So it's just a game over.
I was hoping for like nothing bad happens. It was all in your head.
No. that's explored. That's explored.
Yeah, it's cagey.
Yeah. Come on. Hey.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I did not mean that. I'm sorry. I meant literally.
Literally someone's in a cage.
No. Gosh, damn it.
The fail state is you just kind of go back to the beginning of that challenge. It's a little bit underwhelming because it doesn't, you know, take you back to the point where, you know, you made the wrong choice or anything. It restarts the entire day, and then people are roughly
restarts the year or the just the day.
Just the day. So it takes place over the course of 10 years. Each level is 1 year. Is the like that year's sacrifice?
And it's about a week that you're actually doing it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like the week where you're doing the stalking or whatever or what have you. Like
Ralph's just perpetually lazy and waits until the last week every
year.
Yeah.
Like the god gives you a certain amount of time. And the time when the sacrifice comes is random. Is the thing of it. It'll randomize some elements of it again, but not meaningful ones. So like if you were on the case and you knew pretty much exactly like, okay, I had this narrowed down, but my suspicions were wrong or whatever. You're basically going and redoing a bunch of the same stuff, rolling the dice to uncover a bunch of these, to uncover enough spots on the timeline to where you can make your guess again. Failing is kind of tedious. Yeah.
It says in the description that Ralph has like a day job as well. Do you interact with that at all?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I think maybe he takes the week off, but it's not like a life sim kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the day job more, at least from what I saw, almost it's more relevant in as much as like part of the whole premise is the fact that like, Ralph is not like a crazy dude, like crazed cultist. Like he's someone who doesn't want to be doing this and isn't completely sure that like the god actually exists. And so I feel like the day job is more relevant in the fact that like he's a normal dude the rest of the time, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very little is shown about his life outside of kidnapping and, you know, taking care of his abductee. It's just focused on different things. Like, so despite the grimness and awfulness of what you are doing, like, Ralph is not entirely unsympathetic because of those things Moxie kind of underlined there. Is the, you know, the uncertainty and the regret that's in it. That makes this a little bit easier to stomach and almost makes you forget what it is you're doing until you, you know, kind of like have those little flashes of like, oh yeah, this is probably kind of fucked up. It does a good job of like lulling you into the routine of when you're on the case, you know, distancing you from the actual activity. I think that is an important effect of keeping this entirely in the video editing timeline, kind of deal. I just wish it was a little bit more complex. This feels not incomplete because there is an endless mode that you can do if you want to, if you want to do that outside of the story mode. It just feels very simple. If this didn't have the fully voice acted, story, kind of stuff going alongside of it, I would say this feels a little bit like a very, very good and inspired game jam idea. Mm-hmm. Not that there's not a place for those. It's just that for a full product at the price point that it is, the caveat there is always I'm fine with any of these ones that I stream paying the money for it because it's content, whatever. Right. Also, you know, this is a good enough idea that I feel okay supporting it, you know, more than anything. Other people are going to have different, are going to have different tolerances for that. And I would say this is pretty slight.
Other people might want to buy Buckshot Roulette 5 times.
Maybe. Or, so you know, but buy once for yourself and then 4 more for other people. Probably.
No, gift copies? 5 times for myself.
Yes. Nope. I will keep them all.
The other thing I'd kind of commentary on this is, so I'm someone that generally has fairly low tolerance for, like, I don't know, kind of, you know, dark humor, you know, things that just really wallow in that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, I think if you're someone who leans that way, none of this struck me as it doesn't strike me as a game that really goes out of its way to be mean-spirited.
It's weirdly humane.
Right. And like definitely the vast majority of the people you kill don't deserve it, but there's never a thing where it's like, you know, kill a bus full of nuns while they're on their way to help special needs children who are terminally ill with cancer. You know, like.
There's enough variety in the kinds of people that you're going after that it is, you know, again, except for the one guy, there's probably not an awful lot that warrants what is coming here, but like,
right.
You can,
but it's never just like wallowing in that. I guess it's
not gratuitous and it's not crass about anything.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So like it's a weird game tone wise, but I think it's weird in a direction that I appreciate. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's Life Eater. I wish there was more to it. It's a really cool idea that maybe other people can expand upon. We'll see. Any questions about Life Eater?
Mm-mm.
Cool. That's what I had. Who wants to go next?
Real quick, should we edit out my KG comment? I didn't mean that to be a spoiler.
No.
To be fair, I don't know what it means.
I talked about how he kidnaps the guy and keeps him in a cage in the basement.
Oh, okay.
So yeah,
okay.
No, don't worry about it.
Sorry, my bad.
We can keep this meeting on air. Don't worry. I appreciate the ask, but yeah, that's why I laughed about it, because I thought if it was a pun, I was appreciating it. If it wasn't, that's even funnier. So yeah.
Okay, sweet. So I actually have something new.
Okay.
So I picked up a game actually just earlier today, so I'm not real far into it. But have any of you guys seen Children of the Sun?
S-U-N or S-O-N?
S-U-N. So basically, this is a game that, at its most basic level, is kind of like Sniper Elite.
This looks great. Sorry.
No, no problem. Yeah, no, it's Sniper Elite if Sniper Elite was really, really weird and was a puzzle game.
Oh, this is Sniper Elite meets Hotline Miami.
Yeah, this is Sniper Elite Killer 7 kind of shit going on. But yeah, this looks awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So the plot line is that you are quote unquote the girl who is someone who you know, the story's being kind of revealed via very short, very vague flashbacks. And, you know, I'm very short in, so I'm only going to kind of describe enough to give the basic premise. So, you know, I'm not, you know, not to spoiler more than, like, you know, the first level or three. But basically, like, your family apparently joined a cult. I think while your mother was still pregnant with you, but, you know, so basically you grew up in a cult. Clearly something bad has happened and, you are out for revenge against the cult. And so you're taking out, the members of the cult one by one, with a sniper rifle. The only catch is you only have one bullet. luckily, for some reason that I'm assuming will be explored over the course of the game, you have psychic powers, so when you fire this bullet, as soon as it you know, hits an enemy and kills them, time slows down and the bullet hangs in midair, and you basically aim again and shoot from that location.
Oh, so, advanced ricochet.
Is this like mini golf, but with a sniper rifle bullet?
Yes. It almost actually, in addition to, you know, the kind of the a little bit the premise and the presentation, it almost gameplay wise reminds me of Hotline Miami in as much as a lot of the gameplay is like, here's like five enemies and I need to make sure I need to decide what order I kill them in so that, you know, when I kill one of them, you know, make sure that another one is in view. So like there's things where one of the levels there's like three people in different rooms of a house and then a couple of people around a campfire outside. So what I had to do is like shoot into one of the rooms of the house, then out to one of the people in the campfire, then back into the room because, you know, you couldn't, you know, see. I had to get to where I could see the window, then back to the campfire again, then the third room, and so on. Similarly, there's you know, sections you can do things like shoot gas tanks on cars to cause explosions, and a bunch of the levels have challenges. So for example, one of them was to kill an enemy after your bullet passes through flames. There's also just some kind of fun weird stuff. So like randomly after like the first couple missions, the next mission was breakfast time, and you're not fighting cultists in that. You're simply taking out like a whole bunch of geese flying over a pond, and then the fish in the pond, so that you can get food for breakfast.
Okay.
But yeah, and then other than that, the game has a crazy presentation style. The whole thing is kind of has this sort of painted look. That's not exactly the right way to describe it, but it's kind of like that. And then all of the enemies, their eyes have sort of this weird fiery glow. And any source of light kind of has this like neon glow effect.
It's so all it's very just, neon.
Yeah,
it's very, very trippy. Also, something that's kind of interesting is that I appreciate in terms of a, sometimes like, mastery of an art form is simplification. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I like is that your movement that you have, like, you know, unlike, you know, Sniper Elite, where it's an open world level, your movement is just you can move left or right to kind of circle around this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate the minimalism of that.
Yeah. It's literally just recon, and then everything that you do is shot after that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It looks like you can turn the bullet a little bit while you're shooting it, like in motion.
So you eventually get the ability to curve the bullet in flight. I actually just Wanted unlocked style. That right before I got on and have actually gotten the chance to beat the level yet where you unlock that.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they're going to use that to like have enemies hiding behind cover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know yet if anything else gets unlocked, but you know, it seems like maybe.
Hmm.
The one thing that I think most people are going to love, I personally am not a huge fan of it, but I think most people actually probably like a lot, is it's very oriented around time attack. So right. You get bonus points for getting headshots, hitting moving targets, having the smallest number of ricochets, having the bullet's path move as far as possible, things like that.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If you hit an object instead of a person, do you still get to continue like the streak, or is that like an end shot?
It's an end shot unless it's something like you're hitting explosive to like start an explosion.
Okay.
So when you talk about having as few ricochets as possible, is it like you want to try to line up two headshots to start?
I am not certain. Like so far it keeps I keep getting like really low scores and get like negative points for how many ricochets I had. But the only way I've figured out so far to kill multiple people is to cause an explosion. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure yet if there's something I just haven't figured out yet or what's going on.
Is there anything besides shooting that you can do to affect people's movement or their positioning, things like that?
So I'm not sure. The game Steam page mentions light stealth, so I don't know if there can ever be a scenario where like they can see you as you're moving around. Also, in some of the levels, you know, some of the enemies are kind of walking back and forth, stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then once you start shooting, time moves very slowly, but it's not completely stopped. Mm-hmm. So there is some degree to which, enemies will try to find cover or come out to see what's going on or things like that. I don't know yet, like, how much they do with that.
Okay. Yeah, this game looks rad as hell. Like, mm-hmm. in your experience, is there, like, a threshold score that you need to hit in order to progress, or do you just have to kill everybody?
Kill everyone. From what I can see, it's and I think this speaks to its favor. If you just want to do the storyline, just go through and like shoot some stuff.
Yeah.
It does not seem interested in keeping you from doing that, which I think is a good thing.
Yes.
But then like each level, so far each level, there's about like six guys. You have to take out. So like each level takes, I don't know, like 5 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of presented on a map by which I bring up in order to say like it's one of those things where it's very oriented around like at any point you can just like go earlier on the map and click and like do this level. Mm-hmm. So basically it's very easy to, you know, do it just to beat it and then go back for like trying to chase the high score.
Yeah.
I noticed that at the end of every level, the camera kind of zooms up to a top-down perspective, and it shows you the path your bullet took.
Yes, and you can actually export that path as like an image file, so that thing. Yeah.
I would want it to like you zoom out like, oh snap, I just made a pentagram or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's stuff like that.
This is a fantastic idea. I am real tempted by this one, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really cool. It's only like $15, so it's, you know, pretty cheap.
Yeah. No, I don't have any questions other than just, can you find time for me to play it?
I'll call the guy that does your scheduling. Okay. Unfortunately, I think he's you.
Oh, gosh. Nice. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of this, because I read an article about it saying like, yeah, this is a keeper, that I forgot what it was, because you know, you read so many of those things like that every day, but it's wish listed, baby.
So the only other thing I had, and this is gonna be a short, just kind of like, hey, it's kind of cool to see someone do some quality of life thing. I actually found something that Warframe added that I didn't realize was a thing. With their roguelike mode, I mentioned last time, it switches back and forth between being a, you know, a mode where you're kind of doing this Souls-like combat, and then, like, individual, segments where it's the more conventional, Cyber Ninja Warframe stuff. They have, with that, they have a kind of variant mode that you unlock after you beat the roguelike mode once, that is basically just a series of the Warframe levels. What I like about that is the way it's set up is each week they present, there's three Warframes that you can select the reward track for. And basically, as you play over the week, you get points. And basically, it's like a very, very short-term, week-long, and I should say free, battle pass, where by the end of it, you've unlocked that Warframe and like some basic equipment for it. Okay. And so, in effect, what this is them recognizing is, like, this game is, like, I don't know, like, 15 years old, and there's, like, 30-something Warframes. This is basically just, like, a mechanism for you to, like, kind of go and backfill, unlock really easy some of the older content.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, yeah, I think that's really cool. It's, I also appreciate, like, at least for me, I want to earn what I get, but, you know, it's kind of fun to have something where I can just, like, do some playing and, like, see some bar go up and get a meaningful reward, you know? So, yeah, it's, you know, I appreciate they continue to be, like, the only company in existence that does live service games without being predatory, so.
I was going to ask how they make money, but I'm sure it's, what, cosmetics, probably?
Cosmetics, there's a lot of things, like everything you can unlock in game, there are a fair number of things that if you want to, you can just pay to unlock. So yeah, stuff like that. There is your inventory is limited in terms of like how many Warframes you can have unlocked. However, they also in their free battle pass are pretty generous with, you know, giving you new inventory slots. So, like, I've probably spent, I've maybe spent $60 on this, but I also have, like, 200 to 300 hours played.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So.
Yeah. No, giving you an opportunity to backfill that stuff, that is a direction that I've seen a few companies go. They just, it's not my news story for this week, but the Deep Rock Galactic folks have basically made it so that old content that used to be seasonal is now you can just go do it.
Like, wow, that's nice.
Basically, they added like an undo FOMO kind of option, which is only good, I think. I don't see a reason why not to.
If you have JOMO.
Oh yeah, well that's a preview. We're not there yet. let's see, Ben. Or no, that's not you, Dennis. Round us out.
Yeah,
you're not Ben.
Yeah, not going to have a ton to add. I've been mainlining XCOM 2 nonstop. I won't beat a dead horse.
Is anything different about this, or like I know you doing like the, you know, oops all snipers build or something like that?
No, I'm doing my Legend Iron Man run still. I'm back on a really good one, so hopefully I can see it all the way through. I did have something new happen that I've never had happen before this week, which is I got a free turn. And I'm still trying to work out exactly what happened. I was in the middle of a mission, like in the tactical lair. Had my soldiers in good position, but I wasn't able to take out all the aliens. So it's one of those things where you kind of hit end turn and just wince and wait and see how bad it's going to be.
Uh-huh.
And the alien turn, sign comes up and it's clear the computer's thinking and like it's thinking for a lot longer than I expected. And then it just passed the turn back over to me without doing a single thing. Didn't move an alien, did not shoot, did not overwatch, just gave me a second turn.
Huh.
And so I'm like, I mean, I'm grateful for it that single-handedly won me the mission. But I was trying to figure out like what was that? Had to be some kind of glitch or whatever. Excuse me. The current best theory that I've seen is that it is like an anti-soft lock hack that's in the game.
Okay.
Where as the AI is trying to figure out the optimal play, or it's doing its check down of deciding what to do, if it ever gets stuck in a loop or for whatever reason, something unforeseen breaks and it can't get to a decision, that there's a timer ticking down, and then after long enough, it will just kick the turn back over to the player.
Oh, okay. So just a total failsafe.
Right. Rather than trying to squash every bug that could potentially crop up, just be like, look, if something breaks this, give them a free turn.
And this is showing up for you for the first time in how many hours?
Oh, God. Let's see here. First time in, getting close to 600 hours.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'll take it.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to count on it happening again. but that was, very, very interesting that I came across that.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's all that's new in XCOM 2. I'm very hopeful that at some point in the near future, I'll be coming and telling you guys that I got to a victory screen on Legend Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I've continued to play is the Slay the Spire board game.
Okay.
And so at risk of it not being a video game.
The risk is a different board game.
Yeah. I'll call out some things that I've enjoyed about it. First off, so I think when I talked about it last week, we were in the middle of our first attempt, got all the way to the final boss. And I guess this highlights something I love about board games. We got to the final boss. The rules as written, like the base rules, is if any character dies at any point, you lose the run. But in the back of the rule book, there's an optional rules section. And one thing it suggests is that specifically for boss fights, you don't lose until every single player goes down. Gives you this chance for these like heroic moments or, winning by a hair. And that's exactly what happened is we got to the point where it was just obvious. It's like, okay, I'm going to go down this turn. There's nothing I can do about it. But that's what I remember. I was like, I think I remember seeing something And so, you know, I hadn't stated up front, we're going to use this optional rule or anything, but I kind of asked Luke and Milo, I was like, you guys want to use this optional rule? And of course they're like, yeah, let's keep us going. Mm-hmm. All but Milo, my now 8-year-old, died. And then on the very last turn, he had managed to build up enough poison on the enemy that it ticked down and took the boss out.
So, oh, wow.
So won the run.
Buzzer beater.
Fudging it a little bit using the optional rules.
I mean, it's in the book.
Yeah.
It's in the book.
Better than the Air Bud rule.
Yeah. you're playing this with children.
Yeah, you want to get them to a win.
Yeah.
But I love that about board games is that you have the flexibility to, fudge things a little bit or use optional rules or just kind of make judgment calls on the fly to maximize fun in a way that you can't oftentimes in a video game.
No.
So it's kind of weird to me, though, because correct me if I'm wrong, but like Slay the Spire is not like the original game is not one where, like, I don't know, cut clutch plays, quote unquote, or like heroic stuff. Like, it's not a game that really tries for emotional engagement in that way. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like,
which I think I don't say that as a criticism. I just think it's interesting that kind of the board game is sort of uncovering different ways of using this thing to get, you know, reactions.
Yeah, it's a very good observation where, you know, doing the best job possible in the video game, and I imagine if you're trying to play the board game quote unquote optimally, whatever that means, is like, you know, you've built your deck well enough by the time you get, you know, to the end of the game that the boss fight is a cakewalk. You know, and that's a kind of fun. And then kind of, you know, stumbling, bumbling, rumbling your way through by the skin of your teeth is another kind of fun. And it is. It's really cool to see that, you know, this property, whatever, this game can encompass, you know, multiple different avenues to fun.
Are you all going to play another game?
We already have and right. We're actually to the final boss of our second run and looking pretty good.
And is that the heart?
Not yet. So that's the other thing we got when we beat the game the first time. It has a very robust unlock system. So there are decks of cards, that are kind of, you know, do not open until you beat the game the first time, or do not open until, XYZ happens. So there is a deck of ascension cards, that will make the enemies you fight harder, add more difficult events, etc. into the game. And then there are a deck of unlock cards that, you basically check a number of boxes for how many bosses you beat at the end of every run. And then as you hit certain milestones, you unlock, extra cards to add in to the potential rewards pile. What's really cool is, I guess at some point, I opted into the collector's edition of this, and it has they sent like a big, what do you call it? Tuck box. There we go. A big tuck box filled with holographic versions of more popular cards. And so as we've been coming across those, I've been swapping out the regular card for the holographic one. And that's been fun. Just, you know, shiny things are fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot to, unveil in terms of new cards, new enemies, etc., as you kind of beat the game multiple times. So yeah, having a blast with that. We'll probably finish the second run tomorrow, and then we'll see what Ascension 2 looks like. Onward and upward.
Eventually you'll find the heart.
Going back to that question, once you have unlocked all the cards for every character, you instead put your checks into either colorless card unlocks, which are special cards that are available to everyone, or into Act 4, which would unlock Act 4, as you might imagine. Another one of the feelies that came with the collector's edition is it has each of the key fragments as like a resin thing. which is really cool. So those are just sitting in the box right now, but we'll get them out on the table when we get to that point.
Cool.
That sounds sweet.
Yeah, having a blast with it. The deck, so my kids played the same characters on the second run, but have built vastly different decks with it.
Okay.
Which is cool to see that variety. And like I mentioned last week, there's a little bit more flexibility for you to lean into one kind of gimmick because the other players can cover whatever deficiencies that gimmick might have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is the person enjoying this game the most in your household Jen, since she now has like the rest of her house to herself now?
Probably. I've got to find a way to involve Barrett, and then it'll be Nirvana for Jen. I told her the other day, Luke and Milo are ecstatic about it. The first thing they ask when they get home from school is, can we play it? So, they found something special there. And I kind of shrug at Jen as they're pulling me towards the basement. I'm like, hey, I'm taking two. So it's a good time. It can be played with four players, and I've told Jen anytime you want to put your hand on this stove, you can jump in with us. But yeah, we'll see if that happens.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Sounds good to me. Is that all you had?
That is, I have been hyper focused. Obsessed, some might say, this week.
It's fine. No, you're getting weird anomalies. Mm-hmm. You got a bunch of different irons in the fire, and by a bunch I mean one.
Yeah,
and by fire I mean alien apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to know about JOMO this week. Not FOMO, but the joy of missing out. So what is a game or a gaming trend that you're missing out on? And honestly, that's fine by you. It doesn't have to be because you think it's a bad thing. It's just something that you know you're better off not trying to squeeze in.
Yeah. And I'll get started with Sean, who says, for me, it's Helldivers. Looks great fun, but I've not gotten into a multiplayer game for years, as I know how much of a time sink they can be. I'm just happy concentrating on clearing the backlog before Hellblade 2 releases.
Oh, that is coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I could see Helldivers being that. I mean, especially for how many news articles you see about it, because it's still like, you know, mm-hmm. SEO poisoned, you know? So, yeah, I'm fine just being like, yeah, I probably missed the bus on that. So, I get it.
A lot of it has been made of the fact that their battle passes don't expire.
Yes.
But what they don't mention is that they launched like three battle passes in the space of 6 weeks.
Oops.
Or something. Like, yeah. Just shotgunned all the content out there. So even though you don't have to complete it right away, it sure as hell feels like there's a gold rush that you got to get in on. So
blech.
Yeah, no, totally understand that, even though I love the game.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, that is going to sound mean. Yakuza, Skyrim, and any multiplayer shooter, they might look fun for 5 minutes, but nothing special that will keep my short attention span. When you average about 5 to 10 hours of gaming a week, it needs to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this for me is my like sort of inverse answer, in that this is what I kind of wish I would miss out on.
is someone forcing you to play these games?
I just mean more like all of my favorite games are huge time sink, like live service games. And I'm like, I might be better off if I was actually playing these. I'm not going to stop playing them, but I might be better off.
So Moxie has WOMO, wish of missing out.
Yep.
Moxie, what's Scott Michaels say?
Scott says, I live deep enough in the sticks that I can't get decent high-speed internet. No exaggeration, it took me over 5 days to download God of War Ragnarok.
Oh my god.
Shout out to Frontier Communications for making me feel like I am actually communicating as if I live on the American frontier. So for about 20 years, I've missed out on any fun multiplayer game that can't be played in the same room with everyone else. I'm growing to love this single player experience, and now I don't even feel jealous when my friends tell me about all the multiplayer games I'm missing out on. Besides, by the time I downloaded and installed one of the games, everyone will have moved on to the next one anyway.
Yeah, that's my experience.
The treadmill is real.
Yeah. It's criminal what Frontier decides it can sell as broadband in different places. Or, yeah, for a while that was the only alternative that I had to Spectrum or Time Warner or whatever it is. Yeah, and it was just like, hey, do you want four megabits down? No. Yeah. Blah. Dennis, what does Callum say?
Callum says, live service games. I don't need a forever game. I'd rather play more different games.
Yeah, that's echoing a theme.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Jack says, Pal World. On all axes, Pal World. Has there been anything else about that since the plagiarism stuff kind of died down?
No. I mean, the team...
34.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Including some April Fool's stuff that was generated from inside the building, I believe.
Huh.
But yeah, and the developer actually said, there was a statement, you know, at some point on like, hey, we are intentionally standing against the live service rush. Like, we're really proud of what we put out. We're glad so many people have loved it.
Mm-hmm.
We are working on more, but we're not going to be pressured into putting it out before we feel like it's ready, just because we've captured attention and need to keep it. Like, go play other stuff. You've finished what we've done so far, and we trust that you'll come back when we have more. So yeah. A very well-reasoned stance.
Except
from,
isn't this a team that before has done like things where they half made a game and was like, oh, well, we got your money.
Couple times,
again, well-reasoned stance for a team that has done some otherwise dubious things.
Yeah. Taken in a vacuum, that philosophy makes sense to me. But yeah.
All to say that there has not been significant news since then.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben. What does Phil say? And then read Rosanna's response.
Phil says, the level drinking game for the week. Take a shot every time someone replies with Kingdom Hearts. And then Rizana says, see, what I would have thought Helldivers 2 would have been the drinking choice.
That was a better bet. Yeah.
See, I think Kingdom Hearts is actually one of my FOMOs. I know.
It shouldn't be.
It's more a level of, like, I wish I could be one of the people that, like, still feels emotions enough to love this game.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It seems very silly to me. But, you know, I think that even the biggest Kingdom Hearts fans would say, yes, it is silly.
Totally.
That's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Moxie, round us out with what David says.
David says, I don't get FOMO on games, and joy is something I rarely admit to. Instead, I want to turn this question around and point out how many people I've tried to explain Fallout 2 over the years, and now they're suddenly coming to me with so many questions. Wait, this isn't how this works. We ask you the questions. You don't turn things around.
That's not even a question. That's not turning it around. That's just here's a statement.
Although
David,
say.
I do have some questions about Fallout I would like to ask you, so I'll hit you up later.
Okay. All right. Yeah. just respond. It's right there on the Facebook. You can just respond with the questions. My stepdad watched the Fallout show and really enjoyed it. And I was halfway prepared, because usually he comes to me with questions about stuff and no questions. Like
buy him the Fallout Bible for Christmas.
I mean, I don't think he liked it that much. I think he just enjoyed it as a sci-fi thing.
He will never ask questions.
I was fully prepared to, you know, just be like, oh yeah, this is what Vault-Tec is and all that, and then nope, nothing. So
wow,
yeah, maybe I just haven't talked to him enough since then. maybe
he's got to marinate on it and be like, wait a second. And then you got the questions coming.
Yeah. My answer for this is going to be Magic the Gathering.
There.
Oh, sure.
It's not that I look down on it. And this is just another version of like, oh, I don't want to play a bunch of multiplayer stuff. It's just like, I don't know. I'm kind of happy for it to be none of my business.
It is the only game that I love that I actively like hesitate before teaching anybody else how to play it.
Right. I'm sure I'd understand it. I'm sure I would get some enjoyment out of it. It's just, you know, it's this thing that has been a fixture that I've been adjacent to for almost my entire life and never caught the bug. I'm okay with that to the point where that could just be for somebody else. That's none of my business is a very powerful phrase. I lean on it too much, but it's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
I'm doing an adjacent answer for this one, but I'm going to say it's watching Game of Thrones. I like never made time to do that. And then when the final season hit, I'm like, man, I'm glad I didn't invest in a lot of time into that one.
Dodged a bullet.
Yeah. And you're vindicated. Yeah. Oh man. Speaking of needing to explain things, I guess I just learned that the Deadpool movie is going to be talking about is going to have Cassandra Nova in it. Which is
what?
The Deadpool movie is going to have a very relatively to my mind obscure to the movie's villain in it, Cassandra Nova, and I just happen to know what her whole deal is because I have read the very specific Grant Morrison run that she is from, and so sorry, I refreshed a page and I saw this and I was like, speaking of explaining things, now okay, hopefully the movie will just. We'll just do that.
You expect your dad will have some questions on that one.
Maybe. We'll see. Oh, gosh. Dennis, how about you? Or no. Moxie. Yes, there we go. You were the third one.
So, this is tough. I think one of them is definitely like the Psychopath Simulator games, the, you know, Rust and Escape from Tarkov and stuff like that.
Okay.
I think the other one that's maybe a variant on this is I have a lot of games that I'm very happy I can watch other people play. One of them's definitely, you know, Hexcrank with horror games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is I watch a ton of streaming of people playing like, Paradox games, like grand strategy games and stuff.
Nice. Yeah, that's that is a good answer too, because those are also time sinks.
Yep.
Yeah. And Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, for me, it's the Yakuza games.
Okay.
I've got a neighbor who's super into the series, and you know, I'll talk with him about whatever the latest one is. I forget now.
Infinite Wealth is the newest one.
Yes, thank you. That one. And he'll say things like, yeah, I'm about 50 hours in, so almost out of the tutorial.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he's exaggerating, but also it's that rings a little too true.
They've also gotten to like Call of Duty level things with this in terms of like, I think they're releasing one every year, just alternating Like a Dragon, the mainline games, and then their weird spin-off, like alternate universe games.
Is there another Judgment game in the works? Because there was that split.
Which one's Judgment?
Judgment is the Judgment is like the more murder mystery one that is still a brawler after Like a Dragon went to went to turn-based.
So they released one that is, it's like the man who erased himself. That's like, what if Yakuza but spies?
Yes. Yeah. The man who sold his name or something like that, or erased his name.
Yeah.
It's always been like a series with relatively high release frequency. I think that they just have it kind of nailed down to a science now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got it dialed in. Yeah, Yakuza is kind of one of my FOMO things because every single bit of them that I've played, I've really enjoyed. It's just, it's not compatible with the way that I live my life to get caught up right now. Yeah.
Sure.
Huh. Good question. Good answers. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer in the future, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this one.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Let's see. Dennis, you posted your story here first, so I'm just going to go to yours.
Yeah.
What shitty thing is Sony doing?
Yeah, this one is a certified downer. Usually I try to look for something that's at least funny. This one's just sad. Sony has indefinitely decommissioned the PlayStation 4 servers for Little Big Planet 3. It went down because of some kind of technical issue in January, and they've just finally come back and said, like, yeah, this is a DNR, you know, we're not going to bring it back. Which is absolutely gut-wrenching. You know, I love the Little Big Planet games. I can tell you several levels that I had in Little Big Planet 3 that, you know, even though I haven't played it in a while, it's like, oh, well, that thing I made is gone forever, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's gone. I made like a tic-tac-toe played with hoverbots game.
Mm-hmm.
I made a little volleyball simulator complete with like varying powers of hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was the one I feel like where you really could make anything you could imagine, even outside the realm of platformers.
Yeah.
And I had so much fun playing with that. And yeah, that's just gone now.
Yeah.
And it's not just asinine.
It's not just Little Big Planet 3. Like, there's like backported, like, or forward ported stuff from 1 and 2 that's wiped out in that as well.
Yeah. 3 kind of became the holder for all the stuff from previous games.
It's demoralizing and just thoroughly bleak that something that was like, I don't know, Sony made Sackboy their mascot for a little while, which, you know, I don't have like any particular like affection for these games. I think I mostly have enjoyed them because they've made you happy, Dennis, more than anything. But it's like, sure, something that, where, you know, when the PS3 came out and Little Big Planet was coming around, and so much of the message was, you know, just the joy of creation, you know, get to love games by making your own kind of stuff. And then just to have it be like, yeah, this isn't worth saving. there's no ROI on this. And then just pulling the plug unceremoniously after so many people poured a bunch of stuff into it. It's
no. You don't understand. This is reinforcing the theme that it truly is the creation that is the thing to enjoy. We don't even need the artifacts of that creation.
Taking the reservation's the easy part. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. This sucks. Yeah.
I want to say, so I thought I remembered that there was like, because the original reason that the servers went down, the servers for the PS3 version went down in 2021 due to ongoing DDoS attacks. And I thought I remembered, like, yeah, was it a contingent that was like mad that the older games weren't getting enough support, so they basically burned down their own house? And I think that was the Titanfall community, not the Little Big Planet community.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just, there's no silver lining on this. It just sucks to lose that content.
Yeah.
The Media Molecule went on to make Dreams, which kind of just was a similar.
Oh yeah, no, that didn't hit at all. I never hear about that.
Similar deal. It just suffered from. I can't even say what went wrong with it. Just it seemed to not grab the zeitgeist the way that Sackboy and Little Big Planet did.
They announced it way too soon and were extremely unclear about what it was. I remember Dreams being just a complete messaging failure.
Yeah, it's almost like why wouldn't I just go learn an actual game dev tool at this point? There is that, I guess. If I want to make my own games, I can go start fucking around in not Unity.
Game Maker, any number of things.
So there's options out there for that creative outlet.
Mm-hmm.
But Little Big Planet was something special, and it's kind of, it feels like the end of an era.
Yeah. Well, that sucks.
Womp womp.
Speaking of an era that we thought had ended, this is a new story by way of me like geeking out about something that's is going to happen for me soon. Fortnite Festival, the entirely underwhelming Rock Band ported into Fortnite variant that came out several mm-hmm. months ago, like toward the end of last year, that is finally adding support for Rock Band 4 guitars. So now,
hell yeah.
So now you can actually play this, you know, peripheral based music game with an actual peripheral, which is nice.
Now here's the thing.
Yeah,
their track only has four notes. So are you just not going to use the orange button?
I don't know if it like if it unlocks it when you if a fifth one unlocks when you open it up.
Yeah,
maybe possibly.
Be sorely disappointed if they didn't give you that option, but that also I acknowledge is a huge amount of work to have two versions of every level of difficulty of note track.
There are ways to automatically do that. Like that is a solved problem, at least in the custom DLC community.
Cool.
Don't tell me how I know. Don't ask me how I know that. but yeah, there are ways that just can be like algorithmically done. At the very least, they're probably charting it for five, and then it's being bumped down to four. But this is just my way of saying my Riffmaster is showing up tomorrow. Finally, ending the saga. Or entering into a new chapter of the saga of a new plastic guitar being released and Cole being excited about that and buying it. Apparently it's out of stock everywhere. It's like impossible to get a hold of. I got my pre-order in just in time and I'm so excited because it's showing up tomorrow. And by virtue of me doing all of the electronic drum stuff, in Clone Hero, this thing is going to plug right into that bad boy and I'm going to be able to play all these custom songs with that. So, yeah.
Now it makes sense why you were so, so excited about your niece getting the guitar. You were nesting.
maybe. I was also excited because, you know, I got to share something with somebody who never really had a lot of overlapping interests with.
Yeah.
You know, might have just been family bonding. But also your answer is good, too.
So not to be a like stereotype of myself, but actually something I didn't mention is that Warframe has gotten a Guitar Hero style mode.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was a while ago, right?
I'm not sure. I think it's new.
I think we talked about it last week because there was like a class that has like the thematic thing that I had asked about.
Oh, okay.
There are multiple versions of this.
Yeah. There are.
It was also like an April Fool's Day joke for like World of Warcraft that they were adding a bard class and you would have to play the tracks.
Oh yeah, that was the one where like they did that and everyone's like, no, seriously, why aren't you doing that?
Yeah, that would
like,
actually yeah. Did they actually add that?
Would actually be creative. No.
Oh, okay. Cool.
No. World of Warcraft doesn't do creative.
No. So, not that crazy excited for Fortnite Festival. Still seems like a bad value proposition to me. When you know,
isn't it free?
Yeah, but also no. So it's free to play. Like there's like a rotating set of songs to actually buy a track and be able to play it consistently. It's like $4 or $5 for it, which is not good. That dog's not going to hunt. No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah. So, but the fact that there is now a new controller and I'm going to be getting it soon and nobody else can have it. It's mine. that is the exciting part.
Sweet.
Let's see. Moxie, you've got a story here.
Yeah. So this was an interesting one. You know, some journalist apparently, you know, in passing, posted, you know, something to Twitter, something like that about, you know, standard versus inverted joystick controls.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of a sudden got flooded with people that have, you know, trademark very strong opinions.
This is one of those like weird little gamer holy war things that I have no fucking idea why people argue about it. I understand why somebody would be very irritated if their brain worked, you know, for inverted controls, and the a game didn't support inverting the controls. I think that was the case, at least at launch, for the console version of Teardown. That stopped people from grabbing it. But like the arguments that people even when we were playing Halo and like in high school,
yeah,
people getting like, I don't know, like throwing words, and that's and that never tracked for me. Continue your story. Sorry.
Well,
I did an Andy Rooney thing in the middle of that.
No problem. So what this journalist did is called up two neuroscientists and was like, why the thing? And, you know, they basically said there's not been much actual research on it, but there's potentially some evidence that partially the difference could be whether someone is thinking in terms of, you know, kind of inhabiting their character, and so directing it, you know, turn up, turn down, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Versus controlling their character.
Yeah. I've always considered it like, okay, am I controlling this character, like this view, from the front of the head or from the back of the head? Because like tripod controls are very different than, you know, the other way. And it shifts in context too.
Right.
Like it's hard for me to explain, you know, why I play standard in a third person shooter, an over the shoulder third person shooter. Like standard feels fine, but if I am playing like a third person like flight game, it needs to be inverted.
Well, and so one of the things they discuss is that then the question, would that mean that people that use standard controllers would tend to be, you know, more, engrossed in the game, or whatever you want to say, kind of more inhabiting the game, because, you know, they're thinking in terms of like, I am this character instead of I'm controlling it. But apparently that's one of the few things that there's been at least one study on, and they actually found the opposite.
Okay.
Really? They found that, and Greg, I'm sure this was one study, and I'm guessing, like, you know, this probably wasn't something that was like, you know, we got $1 billion to research this and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it seemed to suggest that people who do inverse controls might, at least to some degree, identify more with the characters and that sort of thing.
Huh.
The other thing they suggested, one, there's the obvious thing of like, did you learn to play games via flight sims? But then they kind of go off the rails, but in a good way, in terms of discussing, apparently in the visual centers of the brain, there's very different tracks in terms of like looking for like, where is this thing versus like, what is this thing and how can I interact with it?
Yeah, it's like a difference in mental models and pathways almost. Yeah.
Right. And so they speculated that it could potentially be a thing where, depending on how someone thinks about games, they could in effect be predominantly playing the game using the pads that are like looking for things and searching and exploring, or which might be more the traditional, non-inverted, or they could be looking at using the paths that are like observing, in which case it might be subconsciously almost. It's like, I am looking at this thing and I'm not moving my character. I'm moving the world around my character to observe my character.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, if I don't know that it could be expressed as like a preference or anything. It's kind of like trying to tell somebody's personality or like how they view the world based on like if they're right or left-handed, which I know people try to do, but like I don't know. I just always, the second I learned that it was a preference for people and I tried to learn doing the other one and how unnatural it felt, like, I just always thought of it like, oh, this is just a different version of handedness, right?
Yeah, yeah.
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 I do think the thing for me, and I think most people are like this, although I do generally use non-inverted controls, I definitely use inverted controls for... flight simulators.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And also, like, one of the reasons that Devil May Cry is the only character action game I've ever gotten to is I can mentally map the control scheme to flight simulator controls.
Mm-hmm.
Because you pull back on the stick to do any moves that, like, hit people up in
oh,
the air.
Yeah. No, I totally get that.
Uh-huh. Huh. Yeah. I mean, there's also something which feels obvious to me and kind of silly to say, but it also might be a novel observation, but like, it's weird that we call the up button up when the way you hold a controller, it is away from you. Right.
That is true.
You know, so like, oh, I push this away to look down. Like, if somebody doesn't conceive of that as up in anything other than name, if it's just in relation to their tint to their head, pushing it forward, being down also makes sense. I'm pushing the head forward. This is the kind of thing. It's almost like a centipede's dilemma kind of deal where I have now thought about this too much. And the next time I go to play any kind of first person game, I'm just going to like choke on my own spit and die.
I think the controller thing is similar to like a map, like north is always pointing up on the,
yeah, you know. Yeah.
The one I want, like, because I know this is like a segment of games that there are like people that are obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And I want one of these people to explain it to me. From what I've seen, it seems like most of the space games don't use the traditional, like, you know, inverted flight yoke type model. They use a, like, you are dragging in the controls in the direction you want to go type of model. And yeah. I'm sure there is some reason for that, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
No, the Star Wars Squadrons game, which overall was just fantastic, was very much not flight controls.
Yeah.
And it baffled me and it angered me. And I'm trying to remember, there was something where even though you could invert the controls, which I promptly did, there was like some edge case or advanced maneuver or some like subsystem where that wasn't inverted, and I would screw myself up so bad just in the, because like, you came across it rarely enough that you never
it was something with the like the drift, I think.
Yes, yeah. That was it. Yep, exactly.
Was this the one that was like X-Wing Alliance, but they released it, like, re-released it recently as like a live service game? Is that this one?
No, this is, it was 2018, I think this was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it was explicitly not live service.
Yeah, there was a multiplayer mode, but it was primarily a single player game, kind of calling up X-Wing and TIE Fighter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's good. It's a really good game. Yeah.
Absolute banger in VR.
So, but
yeah, just that those little things with inverted controls versus not is tough to get your mind around.
So we know that Moxie and I are standard. Is there anybody on this that's inverted?
No, I'm standard.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. If it's like a third person flight, I'm inverted, but cool. Everything else.
Now, did you play
both of my brothers are inverted.
Oh, weird.
And it used to bug the hell out of me when we had like a PS1, we're all sharing.
Oh yeah.
Because every time I went in, they had it turned around.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, did you do inverted back when we were playing Halo?
No.
Okay. Cause I remember there was someone who every so often I would end up swapping in using their controller, and like all of a sudden everything is wrong.
It was, I'm not going to say their names because they're grown up and they have kids.
Just say their address.
The weirdest docs.
Yeah. And also, who cares? I was just going to say the names of the people who were most opinionated about this. Oh, God. Let's see. Ben, you're the only person who doesn't have a story here, at least posted. Yeah. What do you got?
I got that I'm hungry, so I'm ready to end the show.
That's the spirit.
Buttons!
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 497. I appreciate you taking the time. If you want to help out the show and the network, you know what you can do. Ratings, reviews, subscribe, support on Patreon, all of that good stuff. Want to remind people that I stream on weekends, on Friday and Saturday nights. There might be something happening there pretty soon. Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern time through 10 p.m. Eastern time for that. Is there anything I'm forgetting? Okay.
Sure.
All right. Cool. Well, this has been The Level. Thank you so much for listening. I have been Cole. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Moxie, just Moxie.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Here comes Greta. Greta hears the wrap-up voice.
Titles.
Immediately brushing up against my ankles. All right. She wants treats. I only have one. I have Risk is a Different Game. go ahead.
Oh, I have one, but I need to get back to where I wrote down. Okay, I have Back to the Buckshot, guys.
Okay. All right. Dennis, how about you?
It had three. The first one, I'm not sure if it translates well to a title. I was tickled when Ben described something as UIE, as in, you know, user interface-ish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That wouldn't translate. I know what you mean. No. But yeah.
Yes. But I tried it styled a couple different ways and it didn't like it, but I thought I'd mention it. UI-Y is what I landed on.
Yes.
But anyway, I also have It's KG.
Okay.
Just put that out front.
Yeah.
Well, also it will gain new meaning as people actually reach that part.
Yeah.
If we do that, can the photo for the episode be a picture of Nicolas Cage?
No, I want it to. It's got to be a game we talk about.
Yeah. I played Dead by Daylight with Nicolas Cage's character.
There we go.
Now I totally didn't.
Doesn't Quantum whatever have a Cage?
I can't think of it. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think so. What's your third one?
The final one from a late entrant, but a good one, is The Weirdest Docs.
Okay.
Yeah, Quantic Dream has a David Cage.
Oh, yes. There we go. Oh, it does have a David Cage. In fact, I made a reference to known monster David Cage in this episode. Yeah. Ben, you got any?
Yeah, I got WOMO. Wish of Missing Out.
Okay. I like It's Cagey quite a bit. Most out of those.
Goodbye me.
Anybody have any pushback on that?
Nope.
Okay. It is decided.